Hi guys, it's your girl Rue La La, and it's another installation of Talk Burly to Me after a long, long hiatus. Mm-hmm. I have had several life-altering things happening in the course of the time that I have been away. I bought a house. My husband and I had a beautiful little baby girl. Shout out to my baby girl. And by the way, guys, full disclosure, you're probably going to hear her cooing and laughing and stuff in the background, so just roll with it. Pretend like you don't hear it. Anyway, so we are here today to do the topic discussion on, you guessed it, bum, 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 COVID and its impact on the burlesque industry. Ew. And I guess just live entertainment industry in general. And today here with us, we have our guest, Mr. Gideon Hodge.
Good morning.
He is a writer, performer, producer, actor, just thespian creature of existence.
I like to have a lot of hats.
Yeah. You wear tons of hats. I don't know how you do it. I would lose my shit. But yeah, so we are so happy to be back here with you guys and to be going into the new year with a fresh start and hopefully get that vaccine soon and, yeah, you know, be able to have shows again. That'd be nice.
Ooh, shows. Well, happy new year. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming out.
All right.
I work in film and television during the day, and holy shit, it's just been a whirlwind of activity ever since everything happened in March. Obviously, you guys are familiar with the pandemic situation and how it's been crippling American society as of the last several months. But it's New Year.
Well, it was a whirlwind of inactivity, too. On the show Geek Reel, we did a piece about all of the projects that had been postponed or canceled for 2020. I think it was like 17 different Warner Brothers shows had been postponed. No, 70. I'm sorry, it was 70. I didn't even know they had 70 shows running, and they had to postpone. There was a lot of people that were furloughed.
I know, that's Hollywood for you, man. So, all right, well, while we're getting in on this heavy, 2021, we're starting off rough. What generally do you think has affected live performance and entertainment the most from the pandemic of last year?
Man, I'm not sure where to start on that. Fear, definitely being one. And I would say that's probably been a major catalyst. And not necessarily unfounded fear, but a lot of uncertainty, especially earlier on. A lot of us didn't really understand how COVID worked or what was going on with it. So a lot of live performance just shut down entirely. Venues were either closed or at such reduced capacity that producers couldn't really do shows with any sort of economic viability. So I would say limited access to venues and to audience, and then concern for the safety of your performers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've had several people discuss with me about the whole weighing the options when you're a producer, having to be like, okay, well, what precautions can you take and what things are just beyond your control and in the hands of the venue? And it's, you know, it's really tough because, you know, we rely on this money. Like, you know, this is how we pay our bills and pay for these costumes and these acts that we do. Because let's be honest, we're not, like, getting rich off of burly activity. It's like,
those rhinestones aren't buying themselves.
Pretty much. But yeah, I definitely am with you on that. And so can you maybe expound on some ways that you see, like, what are the few industries in your mind that were the most affected by everything that's happened?
Industries in general or industries within the burlesque community?
Either or.
Well, I mean, hospitality definitely probably took the hardest hit. Restaurants, bars, you know, hotels, people either being worried about going to such places or political pressure being put on them by local politicians, by mayors and governors who each had their own set of policies that they put forth. That was the other thing that I think was very confusing for a lot of people, is that there was no sort of federal guidelines. So each state and each community kind of had to self-police. And some took very, very stringent measures, some took more lackadaisical measures, but but there was a lot of confusion. And if you were a performer that was used to traveling, you were dealing with a different set of policies depending on where you were. But I would say the hospitality industry probably got hit harder than anybody else.
Yeah, I have several friends of mine that are like servers and bartenders, and it's just been so hard this year because you want to go back to work, but you feel this social responsibility to abstain from it. And you're torn because, you know, bills got to get paid and the lights got to stay on, but everyone's telling you, oh, don't go out and, you know, don't congregate in groups larger than such and such. And it's, and, you know, some people have been doing much better than others, as you denoted, which has been also a factor, I think, in how everything has been perpetuating itself. But so, okay, well, let's hone in, like, more on us, like, the Burley people. How has the Burley industry tried to combat the issues with producing shows?
Well, I've seen a lot of different approaches from troops throughout the country. So I'm in touch with a lot of different performers around the country, and some people, virtual shows was something that was approached earlier on. I think you're missing a large part of what makes a burlesque show. A burlesque show, with all the audience response and the cheering and things like that throughout the course of a performance, you didn't necessarily have that through virtual performances, but it was an option to keep performers going, to have options to see shows and to perform. I know that there were troops that started doing limited capacity shows where you had a venue that you just had a certain number of
like slots or reservations to fill.
Exactly. Tabernacle in downtown Atlanta. Trixie Minx had done a run of shows down there for Halloween, and it was extremely limited capacity. I mean, Tabernacle is a large, large venue. The tables were spaced very much apart. Everybody was in masks. So they definitely did their best to keep everybody safe and to have really strong guidelines in place for safety and the general health and welfare of the community. So yeah, limited capacity. I think there was some groups up north that were playing with sort of like a drive-through burlesque type of ordeal where you basically like pulled up your car and saw some performances and then moved on. I don't know what the success of that was as far as monetization or audience turnout, but I know that people, it forced people to get creative. You know, how are we going to engage in a community with an audience that is afraid, that is concerned about health and welfare, in a way that is conducive to both the audience and the performers?
Yeah. Also, just something, guys, to keep in mind, you know, tickets might have to get a little bit more expensive for a little while. You know, just especially considering if you are brave enough to start producing live events, you know, just really limiting the amount of people that are allowed in and that are involved in the cast and, you know, henceforth. But, you know, honestly, this is probably one of the most unprecedented events, I think, in live entertainment history.
Yeah, I mean, I've been performing for probably the last 15 years. And I realized some of the more seasoned veterans, that doesn't seem like that long, but in 15 years, I'd never seen anything even remotely like this, nor would I have even anticipated something like this.
Yeah, because that's kind of what shook me, is how just overwhelming it was, and it onset so quickly, because one day we're getting notified about the virus and everyone's need to quarantine and, you know, try to limit your exposure outside. But then it starts becoming this monster that just starts developing on its own, and everything is getting touched on. They're like, oh, well, now they're saying that you can't do this, and now they're saying that it's probably better if you just, like, order out and don't go to the grocery store, and it's, you know, just crazy. Yeah, unanticipated, and most definitely very devastating, I would say, because this has had such a great impact on people's jobs, their ability to earn an income for themselves, their ability to just, like, go out and have, you know, a life outside of work.
Well, and what's been unfortunate is that there are a lot of businesses that folded over the course of this year, because a lot of your sort of mom and pop bakeries, restaurants, cafes, things like that, they're making a marginal overhead month after month. And if you're telling them that for, you know, a few months straight or several months straight, they're not going to be able to do business, that was the end of it. There was this little dessert place called Sugar Jar that I used to go to on a regular basis that my last visit there was my last visit, because they said that they, once they finished off that inventory that day, that was it. They're closing up shop. And I've been going to that place for years. I'm sure anybody listening to this has any number of similar stories of a local shop or restaurant that they went to that just isn't going to be there.
Totally.
So even when we recover from COVID, it's going to be a different landscape. I am hoping that a lot of the mom and pop shops find a way to reopen. I think there's going to be a lot of need for strong community outreach as we rebuild.
Like fundraising and volunteering and donating whatever you can.
Exactly.
You know, I really hope that for as terrible as it's been circumstance-wise, you know, across the board, that we'll only come back that much stronger when things, like, do reopen and it is safe and everybody is vaccinated and, you know, like, people can go out and, like, live life again.
And I think it's going to be a combination. So there's going to be people that are just going to be getting back up on their feet and trying to survive themselves. You know, people that were working in the hospitality industry or people that were furloughed, laid off, or their businesses folded, they're going to be figuring out how to survive. Others of us that might have a little bit more expendable income, maybe the financial hardships of 2020 didn't hit us as hard. I think we are going to have to be a shoulder to lean on for the community and find ways to help bolster that community as it rebuilds.
Give back, yeah. Like, you know, so many of my friends that are independent contractors and artists and freelance designers, and they make things, you know, like chocolate bombs and, you know, t-shirts and, you know, art and, you know, things like that. You know, really, guys, now more than ever, please go support your artists and your artist friends. And, you know, we need art in our lives right now more than ever that I've seen in my lifetime, because of the fact that people have been so down and just so run ragged from economic, you know, circumstances and being depressed and not having a release or an outlet to just, you know, let loose. So, you know, if you have any friends out there that, you know, make bath bombs or, you know, hustle stuff on the side every now and then, you know, throw them a bone and say, yeah, you know what? I do want to support your business.
Well, and also share the word, you know,
absolutely.
Word of mouth is still one of the strongest forms of advertising.
Yeah. Even if you just, you know, buy once and you tell a friend, it does so much more than, you know.
Well, and also I would advocate very strongly for people supporting small businesses. There were some very questionable practices being put in place by different governors and mayors.
and that is my baby, everybody.
Tell us how you really feel about it. But some questionable practices put into place where the small local restaurants and businesses were told to stay closed, to not do business. But like your larger retail chains like Walmart and Target and things like that. And I love Target. I think they're a great company. But these really large powerhouse companies that maybe could have taken a hit were allowed to do business with impunity. And so there was this, I would say, very unequal application to some of these rules, where the local business owners were put under much heavier regulation than the large mega corporations, whatever you want to call them, the large corporations that are nationwide. So as we're rebuilding, as we're putting things back together, I would say try to do a little bit of research in your community, or just ask around. There's people in your community that will let you know, hey, here's who's making cakes, here's who has a little diner, here's, you know, these are the little local places that you could help stay afloat.
Here are my friends that are burlesque performers and producers that would love to put together a show for you, you know, and help generate some foot traffic in your spot. You know, it's a, when we say a community, you guys don't understand how important the venue relationships you cultivate as a producer and a performer are. Because, you know, sometimes like one really helps bolster the other and helps reinforce the necessity of it. Because, you know, we all need like to be able to express ourselves and to have art in our lives and music and, you know, entertainment and theater, because these are the things that really feed the soul in times like we have been experiencing lately. And I really believe that now after everything that we've experienced these last few months more than ever.
Agreed, 110%. And I would say art, I would say community is every bit as important as art itself. Knowing that you are part of something and that that group matters to you and you matter to them. Because creating art and performance and things like that, there's an old saying that art takes two people, an artist and an audience. And without that audience, you don't have art. And so the community isn't just the performers and the producers and the costumers. It is the patrons. It is the audience. It is the venue owners. This is all part of the community. And I think we need to definitely, you know, help bolster each other. So as the burlesque troops and organizations are looking for people to help them get back on their feet as the pandemic, as, you know, as the vaccine gets out, and as hopefully the pandemic subsides here soon, I think we also need to put energy into the local venues that have supported burlesque in the past and supported live theater, and make sure that we are giving patronage to those businesses as well.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that, which I guess that kind of wraps up the, you know, the other question I was going to have for you is, you know, like, how will performers, artists, musicians try to, like, regain traction in the new year with overcoming the challenges that we've been presented?
Well, I know you're going to have audiences that are just hungry to have shows to go to in the first place. So, you know, I mean, I think it's going to be once people feel a measure of comfort and safety again, I think it's going to be on. I think there's going to be a ton of people at shows. I think the shows are going to be fantastic. Put your best, you know, performances together, people, because audiences are going to want to see you. I would also, I mean, and I always advocate this, have a side hustle, you know, have some other thing you are doing to create, which has been mentioned all throughout this, making jewelry, costumes, bath bombs, chocolate bombs, you know, whatever else you can bring with you, bring that out, you know, just make it quality, put your heart into it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And, you know, guys, right now, while everybody is kind of like jumping on the OnlyFans and the Patreon kind of chain to kind of earn some extra money on the side, which, you know, some other platforms, I'm not going to name names, have been restricting exposure from because they're trying to target sex workers and anybody affiliated with that industry. fuck you. So just remember that they are out there, you know, like, go follow their pages, find their social media websites, their Instagram accounts, their Twitter accounts, whatever, follow them however you can, because even that itself is a big help and helping everybody like get back on their feet and get rolling again so that we can start making all you guys happy on stage and sharing the art of burlesque with all of you. You know, I've said this like several times already, but I really hope moving forward in this new year that artists of every ilk come together and find a way to basically almost like have, I know this is so cliche to say this, but a renaissance almost of like the arts and everything, you know, keeping us going on a day-to-day basis through all the bullshit.
Another piece of advice that I had heard from somebody, and they were much, much higher up on the food chain in entertainment than I am, and they basically said that, you know, it's part of your responsibility as an entertainer that once you've, quote, made it, that you help the people under you. You know, you help bring up the next guy, the next gal, whoever. And so I would say for those of you that have been successful, for those of you that have had a good run and do have a good following, see how you can help boost up the people that are still working at making it. You know, the people that are still trying to get their bills paid and to survive right now.
Yeah.
Because that's the other part of community is that, you know, once we've achieved a certain level of status or fame or wealth, that we don't forget how hard it was to get there, and what ways we can help other performers
100%
along the way.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing I've been really proud of throughout this whole ordeal, seeing the amount of love and generosity and just sheer good that has been shared with people that have been struggling and like to feed their families and to pay their mortgage and pay their student loans and stuff. And all you organizations, you volunteers, you people that donated, and you know, grocery store workers, Uber Eats and DoorDash people, you know, medical workers, everyone out there that banded together when we were in a fit of crisis, thank you. We here thank you so much, because
indeed
we couldn't exist or do shows in the first place without you guys. So we just want to say an extra thank you and shout out to you guys for all that you do and the sacrifices you make. And well, I mean, I think that pretty much wraps it up, but I want to thank again Mr. Gideon Hodge for joining us here today. You got any plans coming up for the new year that you want to share with us?
Just a couple of projects that I am working on releasing. I am working with the publisher on my new book series, Aethersphere. First book should be coming out here within the next month or two.
Oh, awesome. Exciting.
Thank you. I'm very excited about that. And then we're looking at releasing the pilot episode for Pros and Cons, which is a nerd-themed sitcom, a little bit later this year.
Awesome. Well, those sounds really fun little projects on the side, and I can't wait to see it. Is there any way we could follow you? What's your social media, or how do people find you when they look you up?
Gideon Hodge, I've got a Facebook account, I've got a website, and then on Instagram, and I think it's Instagram, Gidjinn, G-I-D-J-I-N-N, and I think I'm just Gideon Hodge on Twitter, although I don't do much on Twitter, in all honesty.
All of you guys tuning in today, check out the links listed below in the description of this episode, and we'll have all that information posted for you guys to have direct access to. But so 2020 is over, guys. We've gotten through the woods. Now let's get back to the clearing.
All right.
So, Mr. Gideon Hodge, we want to thank you once again for coming out. This podcast is produced by Four Suits Entertainment and Grayscape Media. And this is your girl, Rue La La. I love you all, and I can't wait to see you guys next time. Bye.